I call this meeting the Property Tax Division to order pursuant to Rule 10.01. The first order of business is that we need to take a roll call to see who's present. Mr. Peterson, will you please take the roll?
Chair Joaquin.
Present.
Joaquin, present. Vice Chair Gomez.
Present.
Gomez, present. Representative Hertas.
Present.
Hertas, present. Representative Anderson.
Anderson, present.
Anderson, present. Representative Becker Finn.
Becker Finn, present.
Becker Finn, present. Representative Fisher. Representative Fisher. Representative Green.
Present.
Green, present. Representative Hassan.
Hassan is present.
Hassan, present. Representative Herr.
Present.
Herr, present. Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt, present.
Marquardt, present. Representative Mortensen.
Present.
Mortensen, present. Representative Pulowski.
Pulowski, present.
Pulowski, present. Representative Torkelson.
Torkelson, present.
Torkelson, present. And Representative Fisher. All right, there's a quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. I want to note that all the committee documents for you today have been sent to members electronically and are in the committee page on the House website at house.mn under Property Tax Division. When this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of all the bill hearings. We received one request for public testimony today, and written testimony was submitted and emailed to Mr. Fennick, and that's also in the electronic packets. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from February 16th. Chair Marquardt, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, and I will move approval of those minutes.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Does anyone have any questions on the minutes? Flip over so I can make sure I see. Any hands go up? Seeing none, members, this is going to be a voice vote, so please, folks, unmute. All those in favor of approving the February 16 minutes, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion is adopted in the minutes. The motion is approved and the minutes are adopted. Members, also in your electronic packets is the revenue impact summary put together by nonpartisan staff for all the bills before us today. I'd also like to note that Representative Fisher is present as well. So actually the next item on the agenda is House File 2775. Representative Fisher, would you like to move that House File 2775 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to make that motion.
Thank you. Representative Fisher moves that House File 2775 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. And with that, Representative Cleavorn, welcome to the Property Tax Committee. Please present, you're able to present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I appreciate your hearing House File 2775 today. House File 2775 is authorizing a tax increment financing district for the City of Plymouth. Excuse me. It is my understanding that the TIF will be used for funding redevelopment of surrounding roadway improvements, improving safety, and for me, more importantly, for planning for transit-friendly intersections and roads that will improve pedestrian safety as well. There are two pieces of information I would like for you to know, and I want to clarify them at the outset. Number one, the roadway currently known as County Road 47 is no longer a county road. It is a road that's been turned back to the City of Plymouth. And number two, and I think it's really important for the committee to know, the primary purpose of this TIF is not for improvements to County Road 47. There is some confusion. I have a bonding bill for County Road 47, and that is actually a different piece of land that is, we are looking to redevelop. The site set for redevelopment is a 75-acre parcel to be developed for mixed use. In your packets today, you have a map of the parcel to be redeveloped. I would like to bring to the committee's attention the need for additional workforce housing in Plymouth. This much needed housing could be incorporated into this redevelopment project. With me today is the mayor of Plymouth, Jeff Washey, who will testify to the committee regarding the project And City Manager Dave Callister is here to answer any questions from the committee. And with that, Madam Chair, I ask that you please acknowledge Mayor Washby. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cleavorn. Welcome to the committee, Mayor Jeff Washke. Mr. Washke, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. It's Jeff Washke. I'm the mayor of Plymouth. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to all the committee members for allowing me to share with you my testimony today regarding this House file. The city is seeking approval of House File 275 to authorize the creation of a TIF district for redevelopment. As Representative Cleavorn said, the Prudential Financial site is going to need necessary public infrastructure improvements, and that's what this is for. The 75-acre site is currently owned by Prudential, but is in the early stages of being sold. The building to be demolished and redeveloped into a mixed-use project that we anticipate will include housing, retail, and potentially office components. The site is currently surrounded by three county highways and Interstate 494 and borders the city of Maple Grove to the north. Hennepin County has indicated it has no funds available for any current or future improvements to County Road 10, County Road 61, County Road 47, or any of the surrounding intersections. And as Representative Cleavorn had stated it recently, the county turned back County Road 47 to the city. And what we feel is the responsibility of Hennepin County to assist with improvements to their own county roadways. We've been told time and time again they have no funds available, which places Plymouth taxpayers in the precarious position of paying twice, i.e. county and city taxes, for much needed regional infrastructure. An example of how Hennepin County has failed to adequately fund improvements to their own roads in Plymouth is when they completed the recent turnback of County Road 47. As part of the turnback, the county was willing to only provide $5 million towards a $30 million project, which amounts to completing an overlay of the existing inferior roadway, which was paved almost 60 years ago. The city, realizing the current dangerous conditions, had no choice but to move the project forward despite the lack of funding from the county. The project will create a safer roadway that includes multimodal transportation, including sidewalks, trails, biking, turning lanes, and roadway shoulders. Another example of the 2019 is the 2019 completion of the County Road 9 bridge over Interstate 494. The 43-year-old deteriorating bridge was in need of replacement to improve safety and eliminate one of the city's most dangerous traffic areas. Plymouth ended up funding a larger share of the bridge than Hennepin County, even though it was a county highway and not a city street. Given the current and future traffic and uses, we anticipate the Prudential redevelopment will require improvements to six intersections surrounding the site with an estimated cost of between $5 and $10 million. Five of the six intersections are county intersections. County has indicated they have no funds for any intersection improvements now or in the future. To construct the necessary roadway improvements surrounding the redevelopment site, we're proposing to establish a TIF district that allows the growth of a new tax base to assist with funding the infrastructure improvements necessary so as not to place an undue burden on Plymouth taxpayers. The redevelopment site is surrounded by one of the most heavily traveled areas of our community and region. Annual average daily traffic for the highway surrounding the site are as follows. Interstate 494 on the west side of the property is 76,000 trips. County Road 10 on the north side is over 20,000 trips per day. County Road 61 on the east side is 22,000. And former County Road 47 is 11,400. House File 2775 would enable us to utilize redevelopment to provide funding solutions to correct existing and future regional traffic congestion and provide a much safer transportation network for the thousands of vehicles that travel these routes each and every day. This is a very important issue for our city, and we respectfully request that you support passage of House File 2775. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Washke. With that, when the hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during this portion of the bill, and we did not receive any requests. But I want to see if folks have any questions for Representative Cleavorn or Mayor Washke on the exemptions to some of the TIF rules that are in this bill. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was my question. If there's anybody there that can explain to me the exemption from the blight test and the blight test as far as that goes, it sounds sounds kind of important, corrosion and stuff. So if there's any explanation on that.
Thank you, Representative Green. Representative Cleavorn, did you want me to go to Mayor Washi, you or nonpartisan staff?
We could start with nonpartisan staff to talk about the importance of the blight test and what it is. And then if there are further questions, I would direct you to City Manager Pallister.
Wonderful. Trying to see who's popping up here. Mr. Cope, can you explain the, I think in the House research summary, you do a good job on explaining the three different blight test, blight correction, and the redevelopment TIF, but maybe you could go through that briefly.
Sure, Madam Chair, thank you, and Representative Green. So normally a redevelopment district needs to be put in place in an area that meets the blight test, which means, areas where a certain portion of the buildings are substandard, or where there's a qualified disaster, or where they're underused, or vacant rail facilities or tank farms. This bill would be exempting that this proposed TIF district from that requirement, and would also be exempting it from the requirement that I think it's 90% of the funds are normally required to be used for correcting blight conditions in a redevelopment district, and that requirement would not apply to the proposed district.
Representative Green, does that answer your question?
Well, it answers the question as to, you know, the blight, but why the exemption? Is there a reason that they don't have to follow that?
Representative Cleveland?
I would refer you to City Manager Callister, please.
Mr. Callister, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Dave Callister, Plymouth City Manager. Could you rephrase the question one more time for me, please?
Representative Green.
Thank you. There's an exemption for the blight test. I've been explained to me what the blight test is, but why is the reason that it's being exempted?
Mr. Callister, I think Representative Green's asked you why you're seeking the exemption to the blight test, which this bill has in it.
Well, I think the biggest reason is because it's on such a large piece of property that doesn't contain structures. There's one big structure, and that itself may qualify for the redevelopment blighted test. We don't know that at this point in time, but we're asking for it because we have limited options for funding the infrastructure and the areas around that surround this area. That's why we're asking for the exemption.
Thank you, Mr. Callister. Representative Green, does that answer your question?
Yeah, kind of, but I would ask then, we deal a lot in these areas. Is the MPCA going to be involved in this? Is this something that they would be in charge of?
Who can take that question? No, Mr. Representative Green, let me clarify. Are you talking about, usually MPCA is there when they're doing cleanup on a site, like right. Doesn't necessarily mean cleanup.
But he said there was a building, excuse me, madam, but he said that, Madam Chair, there was a building that needed to be cleaned up. Most of the area was a big vacant, but there was a building there. And I'm not saying that I oppose this, this exemption. I'm just wondering, because generally you don't get much leeway from agencies.
Thank you, Representative Green. Mr. Callister, are you at the best position to answer that? Or restate what you said?
The property being blighted would be because of age. We don't anticipate, at least at this point in time, having hazardous areas on the site. There could be some bad soils, but they would probably be more wet soils rather than chemical or petroleum-based soils, because a lot of the site has been open space, but there's been a major office building that's substandard and old, and will be demolished as part of this project. And so they'll have a clean slate, likely for the mixed-use development.
Representative Green, does that answer, get a little bit closer to your question?
Yep, that does answer my question. I do have a couple more. I'll just ask them both at the same time,
And this is something that I always ask when we start doing this. And that is that, do you know what the projected increase in property taxes might be through this, and where are they going to fall? Are they going to fall mostly on residents or businesses?
Mr. Callister, Mayor Woshi, or Representative Cleaborn?
I would refer you, please, Madam Chair, to City Manager Callister.
Mr. Callister.
Madam Chair, Representative Green, the current assessed market value of the site is around $27 million, including $10 million for the building itself, which we expect to be demolished. We don't have enough of a detail from the developer because that they're still in the selection process. We don't know exactly what that might be, but it's going to be significantly higher than what that value is today. But I can't give you the dollars for that amount, but that's why we're using the increase in the tax base to help fund some of these improvements. The normal, as you know, the TIF entities, city, county, and schools will get what they're getting now. Even with that reduction from the building, the $10 million in the building value.
Okay. Representative Green?
No, that's fine. Thanks.
Members, any other questions for the testifier, Mayor Woji, Mr. Callister, or Mr. Cope? Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if there are no other questions, I just wanted to offer this before the author's closing remarks. Mayor Wasji, you have alluded to what I have seen as an increasing problem with regard to the capital improvement budget of Hennepin County, and taking care of the county roads out on our side of town. As a past mayor of community near you, this came to my attention some years ago, but I don't know what we're going to do about it, but we've got the most populous county in the state of Minnesota, probably the largest tax capacity and probably the biggest budget. And they spend literally very little money, a budgeted planning component of their multi-billion dollar budget. And having communities having to suck it up, if you will, by accepting turnbacks without the roads being up to snuff before you accept that responsibility is really troubling. And I don't know if there should be some coalition of suburban mayors or cities or whatever, but it doesn't seem as though the county board is addressing this problem or even putting it on their radar as if it matters to them. So I certainly take this conversation offline with you, Mr. Mayor, but we need to do something about this chronic problem.
Representative Hertas, as a former city council member of a city just west, east of you, we share the pain on taking a county road back that wasn't quite up to date. So thank you for your comments. Representative Cleaborn, do you want to go to closing comments? I'm not seeing any other questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And to Representative Hertas, I would say, let's keep pushing on the Highway 55 corridor together. Thank you, Chair and members, for hearing House File 2775 today. And again, I would like to remind you, as you're making your consideration as to what to include in your final committee report, that you please include this, not only for the intersection transit updates and for the public safety for our community, but it's just a really good opportunity to try to get some more workforce housing into our community. Thank you very much for your time today, and I do ask for your supporting. And including this in your final committee division report. Thank you again, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Cleaborn. With that, Representative Fisher renews the motion that House File 2775 be laid over for possible inclusion in the property tax division report. The next item on your agenda is, House File 2700. Representative Herr, would you like to move that House File 2700 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division Report?
Move, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Herr. With that, Representative Sandell, welcome to the Property Tax Division, and please present your bill.
Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. It's a pleasure to appear today with Representative Cleaborn and Mayor Woji to talk about issues our cities share. I appreciate the opportunity today to talk about House File 2700 and bring it to your meeting. 2700 is a tax increment finance bill for the city of Woodbury. The text is brief, but the bill could have a significant impact on Woodbury's civic life and our response to the area's dynamic growth. The bill would allow the city to use the remaining increment held in a current tax increment financing district for the city's Central Park and adds an additional 5 years to the district length. Any TIF request is rich in detail. Our Mayor Ann Byrd is here to address those issues, and after her comments, our city manager, Clint Gridley, is with us also to answer those questions as well. Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd introduce with pride Mayor Ann Byrd.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. Mayor Ann Byrd, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ann Byrd, Mayor of Woodbury. And thank you, Representative Sandell, for that introduction. And Madam Chair and members, thank you for this opportunity to speak with you today. Representative Sandell said, I am here today with our City Administrator, Clint Gridley. Let me first tell you a little bit more about Central Park. Because if you're like me, when I moved here several years ago with my young children, I'm off trying looking through the area. Where is the Central Park? I'm picturing, you know, something like New York City. Lo and behold, no. Our Central Park in Woodbury is an indoor gathering space. And let me tell you a little bit more about it. It is a regional multi-use indoor facility, which was constructed back in 2002. And it provides this great focal point and important gathering space for the East Metro and really the entire state. Central Park creates community by linking resources and people. Well, it's been almost 20 years though without any significant improvements, and our region and our community have grown tremendously in that time. Central Park continues to draw a multicultural, multi-generational group of people from across the region, and it combines a unique combination of resources provided by the city as well as some partners. So the city is there with a park gathering space and an indoor playground. Washington County is a partner with their library. The South Washington County School District 833 that shares in that building space, as does the YMCA. And we even have a Stonecrest Senior Living Center, which is connected by a Skyway bridge. And I'm going to talk more about Stonecrest in a minute. But this well-used facility is really in dire need of renovation and space to continue to service the people of our area. So let's talk about the basics of the TIF bill. So there is a TIF that already exists, a TIF district, TIF District 13. And as it is established, it provides this. First of all, it was established in 2001 as an affordable housing district. And as it currently exists, it will sunset in 2026. So remember, I was talking about that Stonecrest Senior Living Center. Well, Presbyterian Homes owns that, and they rent 16 of their units to Stonecrest to low-income families in exchange for this Skyway linkage, which connects their building right into our Central Park. Proceeds from TIP 13, as currently established, are used to pay the debt through 2022 on the Skyway, which is connecting the Stonecrest to Central Park, and to also pay the developer a portion of the increment. As time moves forward, we get more of the proceeds and the developer gets less. Any surplus from the proceeds from the district, once the debt service is paid off in 2022, currently may only be used for affordable housing pooling or real improvements to the Skyway. But we've got a larger request because we could use funds to help us with this Central Park redevelopment. And so our proposal would allow us to spend surplus TIF revenues on maintenance as well as facility and infrastructure updates to Central Park, rather than just limiting it to revenues to housing or the Skyway improvements. It would also extend the life of the district by 5 years, which would provide a source of revenue because we don't have to make payments to the developer following 2026 as originally intended, and that was the original sunset date of the district. So we do desperately need improvements to Central Park to meet the needs of the community and the region, and we're cobbling together a variety of funding sources to make this all work. This TIF bill, in the end, does not benefit a business, but rather it benefits the region and the people and the taxpayers. So that summarizes what this is all about. I'd be happy to take questions, and Clint Gridley is here, too, to provide any further detail that might be needed.
Thank you, Mayor. Representative Green.
Well, here we go again. In reading through this, the one thing that did kind of bother me on this is you know, we start making these exemptions and now we're pushing outside the district. You know, these rules were put in place for a reason. And I'm sure this bill is going to, you know, be laid over for possible inclusion and we don't know where we're going to stand. But if we continue to go outside the rules, pretty soon there aren't going to be any. And I just think that's dangerous. But then the other question is the same as before. Do you know what the property tax result is going to be when this goes through to your residents and your businesses?
Representative Sandell, Mayor Burt, or Mr. Gridley, who would like to answer that?
Mr. Gridley might be the most familiar with that, Representative Green and Madam Chair.
Mr. Gridley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative, for your question. So the TIF district would benefit the fund balance at the end would approximately have a little more than $1 million that would be able to contribute to the Central Park project. And if it was allowed to continue the additional time period requested, that would be an additional roughly $900,000. So as the mayor mentioned, we're cobbling different funding source for this significant project. As we mentioned, it's connecting to Central Park, so it's not a dissimilar use, it's not a dissimilar intent. And to the extent we can make Central Park and keep it in its good updated form, will really benefit the whole region. But essentially, $1 million would be the fund balance estimate, and another $900,000 would be added through the additional 5-year period.
Representative Green.
Thank you, but the question was what, and maybe the answer is kind of in there, but what percentage or what kind of impact is it going to have both on the on your residential and your businesses? Because not only are taxes going up, but once the value of the land is improved, that almost always, in fact, I think it always does have the effect of higher property values around. Even though income may not be going up, the property taxes will be going up. Have you done any studies on that?
Mr. Gridley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, it is one property that is in the tax increment district, so not a large tax increment district by any measure. And that one property has been substantially benefited by Central Park. It helps them in terms of the facility being viable, and really using the growth and the value of that single property to help pay for the adjacent Central Park improvement. So the burden that you're asking about falling on the greater city with the TIF is very, very modest. We're a city of almost $11 billion in total property value. This, as a hold of that increment and dedicating it to Central Park, will have a negligible, if any, effect to the taxpayers. And as we mentioned, this is a regional facility, and it does have this use of TIF dollars does have a more global benefit for the region with the services that are provided there.
Representative Green.
Okay, thank you. I guess that's good enough. The only other thing then, on the 5-year extension, it sounds like the 5-year extension is just to get the extra money to move outside of the taxing district.
Mr. Gridley?
Just that, then that would be all I need.
Representative, that is correct. So the district is abuts Central Park, and we would like to, again, not expand the TIF district, but we want to just utilize that balance that's there and to extend it, but not looking to expand it, not looking to benefit any particular business, but simply this public space we're hoping to use those proceeds for if the legislature so grants that.
Representative Green.
That's fine, thank you for your patience.
Thank you for your questions, Representative Green. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, appreciate the opportunity. And this is just trying to refresh my understanding of TIF again. You know, these things are complicated and I don't always understand, remember the what it typically covers or doesn't. Typically, can TIP dollars be used for park improvements?
Maybe we'll all go to nonpartisan staff for that. Mr. Cope.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Fisher. So for a housing district, normally increment would only be allowed to be expended on housing projects, administrative expenses, and then infrastructure projects directly related to the housing projects like sewer and water connections. So the improvements to Central Park would not qualify under the general law.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you. And as I understand, that's for a housing in a housing district. Are those kind of funds allowed to be used for parks in any other kind of district, TIP district?
Mr. Cope, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know the answer to that question off the top of my head, Representative Fisher, but I could look into it and get an answer for you.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Cope. I would appreciate it. I'm just trying, because if we're making exceptions, I'm trying to figure out how much of an exception is it for this district versus other district. I'm just trying to get, and then trying to get understanding what the history has been. So thank you. That helps. That takes care of the questions that I have.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Thank you both for your questions. TIF is complicated, and there's a variety of types of TIF districts, and we'll be looking at this closely and those exemptions as we move forward. And I appreciate the committee's questions on it. That's what we have the bill up in front of us for. Members, any other questions?
Madam Chair, would it be appropriate just to clarify Representative Fisher's question?
Yes, Mr. Gridley.
It just to be perfectly clear, this is not a park. It's a facility, and it's a public facility. So it has the name Central Park, which is confusing, as the mayor mentioned, but we're looking to improve this public space, this public facility with this unique intergovernmental arrangement that we have. So not a park, it's a building.
Mr. Gridley, maybe you can explain to us what's in that building for those of us who have not been out to your fine city.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, we have a center area, a gathering space, which is what the city owns and maintains. And we have community rooms where we have senior activities, we have international groups, we have other spaces for the public. And then the library of Washington County, their main library, in fact, the fifth largest or most actively used library in the state, is right there. The ECFE program of the school district is there. They have adult education, English language classes. And then we also have a YMCA that's a connected part to it. And then we have the senior facility, which is a connected part. So we have all these different partners in this sort of unique center space. As many of you know, we don't have a downtown. This is our downtown. This is the one place people can gather. It's the one place where people of all backgrounds, all levels can gather and meet and get together and connect. And that's what the city does. We provide that connection place so these other partners, the YMCA and the library and the school district and the senior facility, all can exist in this unique development.
Thank you, Mr. Gridley. That's helpful. Members, any other questions? Representative Sandell, closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Fisher and Green, for your questions as well. Representative Green, those are some of the questions that I spoke with Mayor Byrd and Mr. Gridley when they asked me to carry this and a couple of other bills as well. Those are issues that concern me and our City Council. Mayor Byrd talked about our city park. Mr. Gridley described some of it. I'd like to use the term civic life when I talk about that park. It's a place where I had my very first interview for this office with a couple of students from Woodbury High School. It's also the place where I had my most recent discussion with constituents about my future in this position. In the meantime, I've enjoyed the library, the performances, the civic meetings, and the just general enthusiasm and energy about the place. It is really a central area across the street from our city hall, across the street from our public safety department. So thanks very much, Chair Joachim and members, and hope you'll endorse our request.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. With that, Representative Herr renews the motion that House File 2700 be laid over for possible inclusion in a property tax division report. The next item on our agenda is House File 1676. So, Representative Sandell, don't go too far. I would like to move that House File 1676 be laid over for possible inclusion in the property tax division report. With that, Representative Sandell, will you please present your next bill? Representative Sandell, you're on mute.
Oh, I'm sorry, pardon me. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm also pleased today to bring House File 1676 to the committee. It's a local lodging tax for the city of Woodbury. As you know, Minnesota law allows all cities to impose a 3% tax with certain parameters. Woodbury has not imposed a local tax, but would like to do so. Other cities, which receive similar treatment, Woodbury would like to dedicate a portion of the lodging tax to assist in financing the recreation needs of our residents and our visitors. Woodbury is a regional center that hosts participants from across the Twin Cities, all of Minnesota, and many guests from Wisconsin. I've often spoke with Mayor Bird and the city's staff about our growth and Woodbury's relationship to the metropolitan area and Wisconsin. Growth's not an easy issue to manage. Woodbury's Planning Commission, our city council, our neighbors all pay close attention to the costs and benefits, the opportunities and attractions, the demands of substantial growth throughout this area. The bill I'm supporting today represents those discussions and careful decisions. I hope your vote will help us prepare to respond to those changes and their implications. With that, I'd like again to talk have you talk with Mayor Burt, who's here to testify, and again, Mr. Gridley, to answer and respond to many of your questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Burt, why don't you go ahead and proceed?
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Representative Sandell, and Madam Chair and members, thank you for this opportunity to talk with you about this lodging tax request. But first, I want to tell you a little bit more about Woodbury, and maybe some of the things I'm going to tell you are going to surprise you. So Representative Sandell said this, Woodbury is growing. We are now the eighth largest city in the state with a population of 80,000 residents. I know, kind of surprising, right? We're the largest city in Washington County. One quarter of the property valuation is based here, as well as one quarter of the jobs and the entire population of the county right here in Woodbury. We are the economic hub of the East Metro. Woodbury is a regional destination for services and retail, and we draw people from all over to come here and shop and go to our services, a lot of medical services as well, which is a huge part of our business. But in all these years, we have not enacted that 3% lodging tax that's allowed by state statute because the way it's structured just hasn't benefited us. I know our current council and previous councils have weighed this for a long time, and it just didn't make sense based on the unique needs of a suburban community. So the standard lodging tax doesn't function well, we don't believe, for suburban communities. We don't need that full 3% to create a CVB alone, but to better utilize those funds to create real value for the region and the state. We respectfully ask for consideration to overhaul this and to think just a little bit bigger and think outside the box. As a community of 80,000 people, we need similar consideration to carve out just as other cities have already been granted. And as the eighth largest city, we've seen that all other cities larger than us, as well as really many cities much smaller than us, have already been granted this carve out. And to deny this would be just disparate treatment. So we're asking for your support for this proposed lodging tax. We would use 1% of the lodging tax for operations for the Convention and Tourism, a destination marketing organization, which is allowed by law. But then we'd like to ask for that additional 2% to be directed to capital construction improvements for recreational facilities, such as our Central Park that we were just talking about. But we've got other recreational facilities in the community that all draw regionally and even from around the state. So the purpose of this request is for capital and operation funding for an information and visitor center at Central Park, capital funding for recreation facilities, which benefit many of the hotels, And for example, with large multi-purpose rooms at Central Park are used by them. But then in addition to provide funding to support the improvements needed at Central Park for the guests that come from the region and around the state, including information, improvement uses, multi-purpose room, gathering spaces, regional activities, special events that are hosted along with the Washington County Library, Independent School District 833, ECFE services, and adult education programs, the YMCA, and even that Stonecrest Senior Living Center. So that is our request today. And again, our City Administrator Clinton Gridley is here with us also to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Mayor Burt. Representative Sandell, I have a quick question just so I am clear. So you do not currently have a lodging tax in place. So this is just the 3% lodging tax. You're just asking for a change in where it's directed. It's not 3% on top of a 3% that's already existing.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Representative Sandell. With that, I think we will go, my computer is not cooperating today. I think my fingers are too cold when I'm touching the keys. When this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of bill hearings. We have one public testifier signed up for House File 1676. And I'm going to have him testify and then move to member questions if that's okay for folks. So I see your hand up, Representative Green. We're putting you on the list. So Todd Hill from Hospitality Minnesota and Minnesota Association of Visitors Bureau is here to testify. Mr. Hill, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee for the opportunity to appear before you today. For the record, my name is Todd Hill with Hill Capital Strategies, and I'm testifying on behalf of my clients, Hospitality Minnesota and the Minnesota Association of Convention and Visitor Bureaus. As in previous sessions, we are here to testify in opposition to the City of Woodbury's proposal to use lodging taxes in a manner not allowed under existing state law. House File 1676 fails to recognize the delicate balance we have in Minnesota's existing law between lodging providers and the promotion and marketing of our communities. Hospitality Minnesota and the MACBB have historically opposed any changes to Minnesota's existing lodging tax law. As the mayor stated, Minnesota's current law allows any community to enact a lodging tax of up to 3% without any legislative involvement, as long as that tax is used for the promotion and marketing of the local community. Under current law, 95% of those funds must be used for marketing and promotion. The only time a local community needs to seek approval of a local lodging tax is when they wish to exceed the 3% or divert those funds to a different use. House File 1676, contrary to the comments just made, seeks to do both. Line 1.11 of this bill allows the local lodging tax to be up to 6%, and it allows to divert 2/3 of that tax to support capital projects. Lodging facilities have long been willing to tax their guests if it helps put heads in beds and markets the local community. My clients do not believe it is appropriate to tax guests to support local community projects their guests may or may not use. Local communities have a number of other funding sources to finance those projects that benefit local residents, bonding, local sales tax, or the use of the property tax. I remind members of this committee of a similar proposal last year for the fast-growing city of Maple Grove. In that instance, this committee, instead of changing the local lodging tax, granted the city of Maple Grove a local option sales tax. The city of Plymouth was granted a few years ago an exception to the lodging tax law, one of the few exceptions this legislature has granted, over the objections of the hospitality industry. But I remind members of this committee, that bill put in place a 10-year sunset on that provision, which we have adamantly supported any efforts to remove that sunset. Finally, I'd like to remind the city of Woodbury and members of this committee of the devastating impacts the last 2 years have had on the hospitality industry. MACBB members have watched their revenue sources dwindle because of the challenges our lodging partners have faced. Hotels and motels continue to struggle. They are struggling to find guests and workers. Many facilities are still capping occupancy to deal with health and safety protocols and the lack of staff. According to numbers gathered by the Hospitality Minnesota last year, nearly 50% of Minnesota's hotels, again, I state this, 50% of Minnesota's hotels have borrowed on average $1.5 million over the last 12 months just to stay afloat. To place a new 6% tax on these properties at this time is just another blow to an industry that is just hoping to survive. Tourism industry experts are hoping we will return to some level of normalcy in 2023. On behalf of the industry, we ask you to oppose 1676, House Bill 1676, and we urge the city of Woodbury to look at other funding sources to cover capital projects. And with that, I would certainly stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Mr. Hill. You actually brought forth some issues, the same issues I had, because when reading this, this isn't really like a change in the law. This is a whole new law. And this is going to open the door, I think, to actually destroy the intent of the lodging tax to begin with, which was to help out the resort communities. And I think this is going to be really damaging. So I have actually a couple of questions. I'll just ask them. Actually, we'll call them three. And then I'll just back off and see if we can get the answers to that. The one is, it was stated that other cities have done this, and I'm not really familiar with that. So if you could tell me how many cities have done this particular waiver and where they are. And then also, why no end date? I mean, because everything was designed as to promote and pay for a project. This looks like it's just going to be an ongoing tax that goes on forever. And then the third question is, don't you think there should be an end to this, to sunset it?
Okay, first, thank you, Representative Green. We'll go to Mr. Hill. I heard that question for you about how many cities have this waiver, or if nonpartisan staff has that answer. We'll go to Mr. Hill first.
I'm not, Madam Chair and Representative Green, I'm not certain of the number. The vast majority of the exceptions to this rule were entities that had in place some type of a local lodging tax prior to 1972. And so they had already enacted a law before this law was adopted. Since that time, at my time at the Capitol and representing these clients, Plymouth is the one exception that comes to mind. And with that, we did put a sunset on it. But it was something that we certainly opposed. We continue to oppose, not just the hospitality industry, but the business community, the Twin West Chamber, and others opposed that proposal at that time as well. There are a handful of cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bloomington, that all have some exceptions for a variety of different reasons involving stadiums and Malls of America and other types of investment. But I don't have the exact number on the number of exceptions.
Mr. Clayman, I saw you pop up. Do you have an answer for us?
Madam Chair and members, I don't have a specific number either, but just paging through, there's a House Research publication. It's an informational brief on the House Research website. It goes back to 2019. And there's an appendix there that lists all of the special local lodging tax laws. And you can scroll through that. There are a few more cities that have had one for public recreational facilities. Duluth had one. It looks like Tofty Lutzen had one. Awabic had one. There may be a few others too. And I can certainly do a count of that and try to update that list and get it to the committee and members if that's something they'd like to.
Thank you, Mr. Clayman. We would appreciate that. Representative Green.
The last part of the question was, why no sunset? And don't you think there should be a sunset? Because if not, it looks like this is just going to go on forever. And I don't think that's the whole idea of this type of financing.
Representative Sandell, Mr. Gridley, or Mayor Burt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The that issue has been a part of our conversations as well. I think Mayor Burt and Mr. Gridley can speak more directly to that. But as Mayor Burt talked about the growth of this city, we have seen substantial growth in all areas of the city, commercial, hospitalities, et cetera. The long-range plans for the city are to continue growing, and Mr. Gridley and Mayor Burt can talk about that in more detail. But I think your suggestion is probably a good one, and Mayor Burton and Mr. Gridley might be able to respond differently.
I'll add a few.
Mayor Burt?
Madam Chair, I'll add to that. It's my understanding that there's like 22 cities that have this carve out, and that all of them, none of them have sunsets except for one of them. I would also say I don't have as much experience in this as maybe some of you, but CVBs work very differently, I think, in rural and outstate areas than they do in suburbs. And the suburban needs are just a little bit different. And Clint, would you like to add anything to that?
Mr. Gridley?
Madam Chair, no, that was well stated. We're asking for what other cities have received. We're not creating something new. Carve-outs have been made, and our uses are consistent with the overburden that Woodbury is the largest city in the East Metro have. So we are looking to this support that will benefit the hotels and heads in beds that are important to the region. Us having solid recreation facilities, updated meeting spaces will benefit the region, will benefit the hotels. And we are a great place, and the hotel business has been growing and doing very well in Woodbury. And lastly, to the point made, this is not a short-term now coming out of a pandemic. This is a long-term goal of the city that will help support us.
Thank you, Mr. Gridley. Representative Green, does that answer some of your questions?
Yeah, I've just got a comment because I get kind of frustrated with this. And, you know, this is what happens when you harm private business, and it seems like you're going to come in and harm your private business again. If these were private companies that were coming in to do these projects, then there wouldn't be tax dollars involved. And if they were profitable and able to sustain themselves, then they would build them. And if they're not, then they don't come in. And so the city says, well, we can do it, but the only way we can do it is to tax the citizens, or in this case, more businesses. So this will could inevitably hurt your lodging. So I certainly wouldn't be in favor of this. I know it's going to be laid over, but I think that needs to be some forethought in before we do this.
Thank you, Representative Green. I'm Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I actually kind of get to a similar spot to Representative Green, but I think in a very different way. I too share concerns about, you know, opening the door to more and more and more uses of various taxation tools that we talk about in this committee, that for functions that in a lot of ways, you know, are maybe, you know, could be considered core city services. So, you know, we have obviously, like, taxes like this are regressive. They are not income dependent, and much like, you know, the conversation around sales taxes generally. And, I think that we have to be very judicious in how we use them. And, you know, I Woodbury is a relatively affluent community, and I'm interested in sort of, you know, why we're relying on kind of our most regressive tax tools to, you know, to build, invest in capital, which again is like something that cities have to do, rather than, you know, looking to the property tax levy or other tools that we might have. I think Representative Green and I have different perspectives broadly, because like the way that I think about this is, you know, if you look over time, over decades, at the investment in the public good that government has been doing, it's declined, when especially like, you know, when you look at inflation adjusted dollars on pretty much every level. You know, we have big kind of arguments about whether at the state level about whether we should use our progressive tax tools more aggressively, like you know, Representative Herr had a fifth tier income tax last year, which you know, would have brought more revenue into the state so that we could keep up with some of these obligations potentially through other tools. And that is a very progressive tool. That's a tool that, you know, that if you are a kind of struggling person, that you don't have to, that you know, an increase in that way doesn't impact you. So, you know, I don't really have a question. I guess I'm just saying that you know, I don't like us relying on, you know, carve outs from sort of the way that one of these tax tools was designed to work, in order to sort of like fulfill, again, the kind of basic core services that cities provide their residents. And so that's just my perspective on it. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Members, any other questions? Mayor Burt, real quick, we're trying to stick to our schedule.
I just want to add a couple quick things. One is just a clarification on Mr. Hill's comment. I believe the bill is written for just 3%, not 3% plus an additional. We're not asking for 6, we're only asking for 3. And then also, just to clarify, this is not a burden on the local business, because the business is not paying this fee. It's the people that come to visit our region, the East Metro, and our community. We've got some nice sports facilities. We get teams and people from all over the region, the country, next door in Wisconsin. And what we're asking for is some help so that our residents are not paying the overburden for what we're supporting in this East Metro. And that's really it. So again, not 3%, not 6, and just asking for those people that come to visit our community, that they share in some of the cost of these facilities and services that they come to visit, and that all of our residents don't pay for it themselves.
Thank you, Mayor Burt. Mr. Hill, can you please mute your microphone?
Sorry.
That's okay. With that, members, I renew my motion. Oh, sorry, Representative Sandell, any final comments?
No problem, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you very much for your patience. I support this piece of legislation. My conversation with City Hall and our civic leaders support it as well. The hospitality industry, the recreational industry, the commercial growth in the city, I think, are cooperative. One builds upon the other, and this is an opportunity to for all of us to benefit, and to benefit the Southeast area, and I really think a benefit for the state of Minnesota. So thank you, ma'am, and thank you, Madam Chairman, and thank you, committee members.
Thank you, Representative Sandell, and thank you for the conversation, committee members. With that, I renew the motion that House File 1676 be laid over for possible inclusion in a property tax division report. The next item on the agenda, hopefully we'll go a little quicker. We're coming up to, we have 3 more bills in 30 minutes, but our last one, I promise, will be fast. I think this one will be too. The next item on our agenda is House File 3074. Representative Fisher, would you like to move that House File 3074 be laid over for possible inclusion in a property tax division report?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move it for layover, please.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. And with that, welcome to the committee, Representative Eklund. Please proceed and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. House File 3074 is a bill for Cook County, Minnesota. It's for the renewal of its additional 1% lodging tax for another 15 years. This is in addition to the current 3% lodging tax. As you know, Madam Chair, lodging taxes above 3% require legislative approval. This tax has been added in 2008. And expires in November of 2023. We are asking for the extension this year for continuity of programming and budgeting. The additional 1% is targeted for local events and programming. As you all know, tourism is the top industry in Cook County. Visit Cook County's work is a cornerstone of the economic well-being of the community, and we appreciate the committee's support. I'd like to turn it over to the director of Visit Cook County for comments, Ms. Linda Jurek.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. We have Linda Jurek here from Visit Cook County to testify. Ms. Jurek, please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Linda Jurek, and I serve as the Executive Director of Visit Cook County and the Cook County Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Eklund, and committee members for allowing me the opportunity to address you today. Visit Cook County is the destination marketing organization located in northeastern Minnesota. I'm hoping many of you have had the opportunity to visit our area. We unite the Cook County tourism organizations under one umbrella to achieve greater marketing and branding efforts for Northeastern Minnesota. As is customary for DMOs or visitor bureaus, our marketing and branding initiatives are funded by the collection of lodging tax. And we represent six distinct communities: Schroeder, Tofte, Lutzen, Grand Marais, Grand Portage, and the Gunflint Trail. As we've just heard, Statute 469190, which is the 3% lodging tax, and we do collect that 3% lodging tax according to this statute. And we use that money as it's needed to be used for marketing promotion of our area. In addition to that, we have collected a 1% lodging tax, as Representative Eklund just referred to, since 2008. In 2008, the tourism associations of the Gunflint Trail, Grand Marais, and Lutzen Tofte Schroeder came together, and they ultimately were successful in gaining support for that additional 1% lodging tax. And now 15 years later, we're looking to renew that. This renewal is supported by our lodging partners and received approval from the Cook County Board of Commissioners in September of 2021. The renewal is vital for our tourism economy in order to continue to make contributions that solidify and enhance our community assets and bring wider awareness and support for visitor growth and economic opportunities in our number one industry, which is tourism. We utilize the 1% lodging tax to support activities, events, music, arts and culture programming, and ultimately it contributes to a higher quality of life in our corner. We have an incredible amount of accountability and analysis each year of that 1% use. We've implemented a thorough evaluation and budgeting process with all of the tourism associations, and every year that budget is approved by the Cook County Board of Commissioners. We do not have a large event center. However, we have many partnering organizations that draw visitors to our area each year by hosting events and providing unique and culturally based programming. In fact, since the original adoption of the 1% tax, we have documented over $3 million of support for events and programming in Cook County. I have many, many examples I could give you, but for the sake of time, I won't do that. I will just say that one of the key drivers of that 1% was to grow our shoulder season traffic, meaning our slower months of the year, in order to sustain a better 12-month economy. And since 2011, we have documented growth that shows this. In April and May, we've grown 93%, June 156%, and in November 40%. We also estimate an increase in visitors by approximately 40,000 people annually from just 10 high impact events alone. The 1% lodging tax collection will expire in November of 2023. This is not a new lodging tax, but rather a renewal. It's been supported by our lodging partners as well as our commissioners. And we have had proven success in our use and stewardship of this 1% tax. A failure to extend the 1% use, the collection will be felt immediately countywide with the loss of support to local nonprofits, musicians, artists, cultural programming. Well, the list is very, very lengthy. Ultimately, non-renewal will affect Cook County's number one industry, tourism. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Eklund, and committee members. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Jurek. I have a quick one, and I know we've talked about this when we met before. So you have the 3% in place that all cities can do without coming to the legislature. You got that 1% above that back in 2008, and you have a procedure in place where your county board actually has to vote on that every year too, and then you've gotten regional support?
Exactly. Every year in July, right in there, we go to the county commissioners and we present the 1% budget, and that is presented for their approval.
Thank you, Ms. Jurek. Members, do we have any questions? Maybe I asked them for everybody. Members, seeing no questions, Representative Eklund, do you have some closing comments?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think if you and the committee caught what Ms. Jurek was talking about here is through Visit Cook County, they've been able to pull six very divergent communities together to be working on one team. And for those of you that have had the privilege of visiting Cook County in my district, you can tell that they're doing one heck of a job. So I just ask the committee support for this bill as you go forward and put together your final report, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. With that, Representative Fisher renews the motion that House File 3074 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. Members, there was no public testimony sign up for this one. And just to note on your fiscal spreadsheet, none of these have a state impact, but our next bill does, and I'm sure Chair Markert will talk to that. The next item on our agenda is House File 2928. Chair Markert, would you like to move that bill to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I would. I'd like to move House File 2928 for possible inclusion into the division report.
Thank you, Chair Markert. Go ahead and proceed.
So House File 2928, if it was implemented, I believe would really change the way cities and counties provide and talk about the services they provide to their citizens. And I am totally convinced that it would improve the quality of life for residents of the state and for our constituents. And so what does it do? Right now, there's a local performance measurement program that was started, I think it first went into effect in 2011, and it's run by the state auditor's office. And cities and counties, if they can plug in and do 10 performance measures. And with that, if they do, there were two incentives. One was a 14 cents per capita incentive. And the other one is that they would not have to go under any levy limits. Well, there aren't any levy limits, so there really aren't much for incentives. So right now we've got cities and counties. So in fact, there's 37 cities, about 4%, and 28 counties, which is about 32%, currently doing the program. So what House File 2928 would do is make three major changes. It really replaces this program and keeps a lot of it, but adds three major things to it. Number one is that it adds a citizens' performance management and budget meeting that cities and counties would have to do to talk about their 10 performance measures. They'd have to get public input, and they'd have to talk about their budget process. The second thing that would be different from currently is they would have to, the city or county would have to pick two of their performance measures to look at strategic plans for improvement. Right now, you don't have to do that. You just have to measure it. You don't have to look at anything to improve. So this would really move from measuring to improving results. And the third major change would be the incentive. The amount of aid that would go out is greatly enhanced. So let me talk about, you know, why is it important that we measure performance and we have performance management systems? And I want to say that, again, a lot of cities are doing this already. This is not a criticism of city or county services. But the fact of the matter is that we send out in the state $4 billion every 2 years. The local government aid, county program aid, property tax refund, renters credit, and so forth. And yet, do we know as members of the legislature what type of value we're getting for those dollars when we send them out? What type of service are we getting? And actually, if you were to ask a mayor or a county commissioner, could they tell you? Now, they might say, I don't get any phone calls and that type of thing. But how safe do they know their citizens are without asking them? Because they might say, well, we know they're safe because we've got X amount of officers. We've got X amount of police cars. Our crime rate is this. That does not tell you how safe your city is, because that depends on what people are thinking in their community and what might be happening. Or what do residents in their town think of the snow removal?
or the condition of their streets or the communication with their city or county. All these things that can make a difference. This would actually provide a set incentive to measure that. One other thing is that government is a monopoly. So if you live in a city or a county, those services are provided by that city or county, and you can't go elsewhere for the most part. Now, in schools, we've implemented a little bit of competition through open enrollment, charter schools, PSEO, and so forth, but that doesn't exist. And so there's no real competition. There's no incentive for cities and counties to do better or worse with their services. And again, that's not a hit on cities or counties. The system just is set up that way, is that you have an assured customer that has to pay a set price that you set, regardless of the quality of the service that is provided. So a performance management and measurement system would actually create these measurements. And by adding two that you have to work on, you'd actually have to look and take a look at that. The bottom line is hopefully better service at a better cost. The last thing that would benefit from this is best practices. We could look as a state and say, hey, this city or county has ranks high in public safety. Boy, that cost is pretty good. What are they doing? And you could actually be able to look at best practices to see what's happening out there and share information. There's a lot of cities and counties right now doing an excellent job that they could be mentors for as we look at trying to improve things. So the last thing I want to get to is why is it, I think it's $12.2 million in 2024, and that would go up to $25 million the next year with the incentives. So why the big incentive and what would those dollars be used for? So we know in a county, the system set up that you get $10 per capita up to $10,000. A minimum that any county would get would be $50,000. Then goes up to $250,000 as max. For a city, it's $20 per capita up to $2,000, which could be $40,000 for a city of $2,000, and goes again to a maximum of $250,000. So you notice I've kind of set $40,000 and $50,000 as kind of minimums. Why? Because that probably is what you would need to at least fund a halftime position if you wanted to be able to lead this performance measurement. And remember, this program is totally voluntary. But I'm trying to create the incentive that actually would get folks and actually maybe citizens to ask, hey, why aren't you doing this? And so it could help cover the staff, could help cover staff and other changes that might be needed to address one of their, both of the strategic measures that they want to improve. It might be rewards, it might be gain sharing, it might be sharing savings and so forth. Might allow them to try new things. Drive innovation. So, you know, well, if we think this is important as a state, that we find out what is the value that that $4 billion is getting, and if cities and counties think it's important to know what citizens are thinking, how can we look at services, measure those, and improve, then the state should be in there to pick up some of that tab. Otherwise, it's an unfunded mandate. I think it would be money well spent. I'm certainly willing to look at, you know, the $12 million and $25 million. Maybe we don't need this much of an incentive, but I wanted to make it valuable so that citizens can look at this, elected officials can look at this and say, hey, this is worth our time, and it's going to pay for itself many times over. So that's the bill. Ultimately, you'd have to certify with the department or the auditor's office, and the auditor's office then would get to DOR as to who has complied, and DOR would then notify the cities and then make the payment in December of the following year. Madam Chair, that's the bill kind of quickly.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Members, do we have any questions for Chair Marquardt? I know this has been one of your projects that you've had for a while with good government transparency and incentives to do a good job. Representative Fruithaus.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Marquardt. We're kind of tracking on some similar ideas in terms of increasing some of the transparency and the fairness of how communities are getting aid from the state. When I was reading the summary, though, and I think I should probably know the answer, but I just want to hear it from you. Is this a one-time disbursement to enroll in this program, or is this a reoccurring annual program that would be available?
Madam
Chair and Representative Hertaus, this would be ongoing. Yeah, those costs would be ongoing. So that $25 million cost in fiscal year 2025 would be ongoing. That's why I may have to take a little bit of look at that number.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, Representative Marquardt. I'm sure you are going to get a nice big fat tax target with all of this surplus money. Let's get it done.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt, any quick final words before we move on to our last bill?
No, thank you so much, Madam Chair. You said it. I mean, this is increasing transparency, increasing accountability, and the bottom line is I have no doubt it would improve the quality of life for our constituents and the citizens across the state. So thank you much. I'd renew my motion, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House file look at where the number was. House File 2928 as laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. With that, I am going to hand the virtual gavel over to our Vice Chair, Representative Gomez, as I present my bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the next item on our agenda is House File 3381. Chair Joaquin, would you like to move that your bill be laid over for possible inclusion in our Property Tax Division report?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Chair Joaquin. You may proceed with the presentation of your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill would make a number of technical and clarifying changes to Statute 2297A.99. This is the statute that outlines the process a city and county must follow to receive authorization to impose a local option sales tax, something we'll be diving into in a few weeks again. The League of Minnesota Cities suggested these changes to help provide more transparency to the new process that was set in statute in 2019. Section 1 cleans up the language on what a political subdivision can spend their lost funds on. Section 2 clarifies language on the resolution the city must provide by January 31st of the year that they're going to be going out to the voters about their requests, as well as what they must do if they decide to adjust that project that they've previously received legislative approval for. Adjustments like adding projects, increasing the amount of a project to projects, increasing the total revenues raised by the sales tax, or increasing the duration of the sales tax. Section 3 clarifies that the referendum that must be conducted by the requesting jurisdiction be held on any first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. Last year, our omnibus tax bill authorized 19 jurisdictions to go to the voters for approval of these local option sales taxes. But due to the ambiguity in the statute, most of those jurisdictions chose to wait until this coming November to conduct the referendum. Members, this is a bill that will provide a lot more transparency for our local jurisdictions and how the local option sales tax is conducted and the requests that they have to put forth, and also more transparency for the public. With me today to provide very brief testimony or to answer any questions is Gary Carlson, the Government Relations Director for the League of Minnesota Cities.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson with the League of Minnesota Cities. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and thank you, Representative Joaquin, for working with me on a few of these issues. I know you had some ideas that were merged into this bill as well. The one I want to really point to that I think is perhaps a little less technical, but I think it's more clarifying for many of our cities, as Representative Joaquin indicated, is the provision that clarifies when the election or referendum election could be held. As she indicated, last year, you approved 19 local sales taxes in the tax bill, three county and 16 city taxes. And after that was passed, I had several cities call me and ask me, you know, what is the general election? How is that defined? And it's really not defined in 297A.99, the statute that governs those sales taxes. And so many of those cities have had to wait now. They'll have to wait until this November, nearly 17 or 18 months since the enactment of that bill, to conduct their referendum. So we think it would be a good clarifying aspect to just say the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. And as I recall going back in time, and maybe Chair Marquardt remembers, but I knew there was a lot of hesitancy about allowing a special election, a non-November election, to conduct a referendum. And as I talked to some of the House attorneys, the nonpartisan attorneys, they kind of felt that the law was unclear, but that the intention was to avoid a special election. So we appreciate your consideration of this, and I would stand for any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carlson. Just wanted to note for members that we received a revenue estimate via email, and then it's on the website as well, and there's no general fund impact for this. Just looking to see if there are any member questions about this one. Give it a second, but I'm not seeing anyone. Thank you so much, Mr. Carlson. I think we, seeing no questions, Chair Joachim, do you want to just share some final words with us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just renew my motion to have it be laid over. I think it's a nice way for cities to be able to kind of be able to have very definite directions on how to implement these local option sales tax. And I think we just needed to clean this section up, and we might be doing a little bit more cleanup before the end of session.
Sounds good, Madam Chair. Thank you. And with that, Chair Joachim renews her motion that House File 3381 be laid over for possible inclusion in a property tax division report. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll hand the big gavel back over to you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gomez. And thank you, members, for your work today. I do really appreciate the questions that the committee had around the bills. That's why we have committees, right? To make bills better and to get our questions answered and to craft good policies. So the next committee meeting will be next week, Wednesday, March 2nd, at our normal 3 p.m. committee time as we continue to hear more bills. And then I also want to note that yesterday, RCLA, Mr. Peterson, sent out an email to the committee members and staff about an additional committee meeting being added to the calendar on Wednesday, March 9th. I'd like to thank Chair Marquardt for giving us his 1 p.m. tax time that day. We're going to kick off that day with local option sales tax. And during that tax time at 1 p.m. and then continue our time into our 3 p.m. meeting to finish up hearing those local option sales tax projects. So that's on March 9th. Stay tuned for us posting for March 2nd, still working some stuff out. Members, do you have any questions on the next few weeks for me? Seeing none, members, thank you. Please be careful driving out there, and we are adjourned.